Good morning. This is Neil Strauser with the CBS World News Roundup. Washington is becoming the hub for the last-ditch Falklands negotiations. British Foreign Minister Pym has left after talks here, and Argentina's foreign minister is due here later this weekend. We have two reports, first from London, to which the foreign minister has returned, and Martha Teichner.
British Foreign Secretary Francis Pym spent 2 hours at 10 Downing Street after returning to London, briefing Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher on his talks with Secretary of State Alexander Haig.
We discussed very thoroughly the ideas which he had produced, and we also discussed the British ideas which I took over, and I have now come back at the end of that process and have reported to the Prime Minister, so I think you could say that that is a bit of progress, but as I say, I must consider with others and the Prime Minister again.
In spite of official optimism, a political correspondent who flew back from Washington with Pym reports that the Foreign Secretary privately believes it is virtually impossible for the crisis to be resolved without a shot being fired. Pym has reportedly told friends that the crunch will come in days rather than weeks. Meanwhile, the Ministry of Defense has announced that a member of the British Task Force, a helicopter crewman, was killed when his helicopter crashed during training exercises. And the ministry still refuses to pinpoint the location of the Royal Navy Task Force. Martha Teichner, CBS News, London. For the latest from Argentina, here is Charles Gomez in Buenos Aires.
Argentine officials are expressing outrage over reports that two British warships are now less than 54 miles from the South Georgia Islands. In addition, according to a military source, five British ships are within helicopter and plane range of the South Georgias. Argentina has ordered its Organization of American States ambassador to file an immediate protest. And last evening, Foreign Minister Nicanor Costa Mendez told CBS News, quote, "The fleet is advancing in violation of all rules and regulations and of the Rio Treaty," end quote. Costa Mendes is expected to bring up the matter when he meets this morning with military commanders at the Defense Ministry before leaving Buenos Aires this evening for New York on his way to a special session of the Organization of American States on Monday. That session is being held to determine whether the Rio Treaty should be invoked. Charles Gomez, CBS News, Buenos Aires.
The Japanese Maritime Agency reports that five Japanese fishing boats with crews totaling 60 men have been seized today in the Yellow Sea by what appear to be North Korean patrol boats. There's no word on why they were seized. Israel today is spending what is described as a calm and sorrowful Sabbath, with its final withdrawal from the Sinai now due in less than 24 hours. Bruno Wassertal reports from Jerusalem.
In the once beautiful and cheerful town of Yamit, nothing remains but the yeshiva, the Jewish religious school where 20 protesters to the withdrawal, led by a rabbi, have been given special permission by the Israeli army to celebrate the holy day in what was, up to yesterday, the Jewish capital of the Sinai. Tomorrow, Israel's final turnover of the massive peninsula back to Egypt will be marked by a modest 10-minute flag-lowering ceremony at Ophira on the eastern coast of the Sinai near the Straits of Tiran, whose closure by Egypt to Israeli shipping triggered the start of two previous Arab-Israeli wars. After the Israeli army's brief farewell to the Sinai, Ophira will once again be known by its Arabic name, Sharm el-Sheikh. Israelis are hoping that the traumatic experience of leaving the Sinai will be healed by time and proof from Egypt that the sacrifice of the Sinai for peace was not in vain. Bruno Wassertal, CBS News, Jerusalem.
From Cairo, some words of understanding for the Israeli feelings from the Egyptian Foreign Minister Kamal Hassan Ali. Mitchell Krauss reports.
Insisting that recent snags in the Sinai withdrawal negotiations have not embittered the atmosphere between Egypt and Israel, Hassan Ali expressed sympathy with the Israeli decision to level the Yamit settlement in the northern Sinai in order to avoid possible trouble from former residents seeking return of their homes.
Actually, we are sorry for that, but we see the difficulties of the Israeli government in this respect. I know you have lost two times. The first, when you built this area, the second, when you destructed it without selling it to us, because we were ready to purchase all these arrangements and constructions, and you were willing to do so. But we know why you destructed it, and we do not blame you.
As for the open question of remaining border disputes, Hassan Ali said a few details still have not been settled, and negotiations will continue right up to and through the withdrawal deadline tomorrow. Mitchell Krauss, CBS News, Cairo.
Lebanese police report a ceasefire is now being enforced in the northern port city of Tripoli, where 2 days of street fighting between communist and pro-Iraqi militias left 15 people dead and some 20 injured. All week, the budget negotiators for the White House and the Congress have been meeting, each time for what seemed like a final session. But tomorrow afternoon, they will try again. Susan Spencer reports.
The negotiators have given up trying to agree on anything very specific. Their goal now, just to reach agreement on categories and targets. In other words, on some statement of just how big the deficit is, how much taxes should be raised, and how much spending should be cut. That would leave to Congress the tougher part of just how to do it. The biggest stumbling block, even to that, seems to be just what it was a month ago when the talk started. The administration's insistence that its tax program not be touched. Though it's a far cry from the bipartisan compromise they originally sought, both sides are insisting that even targets would be an accomplishment. Democrats say they would welcome an acknowledgement from the administration that the deficits will be considerably bigger than Mr. Reagan has yet publicly acknowledged. But even getting targets and deficit numbers is by no means assured, and it may be that what both sides want most right now is to figure some graceful way to stop talking so Congress can get to work. Susan Spencer, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
At the Pentagon, Bill Lynch reports efforts underway to identify areas that could be cut if the Budget Act swings in that direction.
A number of congressional critics of expensive weapon systems would like to kill or postpone big-ticket items like the B-1 bomber and M-1 tank. Secretary Weinberger is expected to fight to save those programs as essential for countering the Soviet buildup. Congressional sources say the most current proposal from the administration calls for cuts of around $5 billion from force levels and $2 billion from holding military pay raises to 5% this year. The plan would trim $23 billion more in 1984 and 85. But Pentagon plans to disband military units or reduce operational readiness would not go well with Congress either. Last year, there was talk of folding the Army's 7th Infantry Division, and veterans of budget politics compare these latest ideas to periodic threats by the Interior Department to padlock the Washington Monument. Even if its budget is shaved by about $7 billion, the Defense Department would still get 97% of what it asked for. Bill Lynch, CBS News, The Pentagon.
President Reagan today delivers the fourth in his series of Saturday radio addresses. Again, the White House has not even announced a topic, making life a little more difficult for the Democrats who attempt to answer the president in a broadcast an hour later. John Hinckley, the man accused of shooting President Reagan, was taken from Fort Meade to Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore last evening to undergo a CAT scan under a court order. The computer-enhanced X-ray may have been carried out as part of the expected insanity defense to be offered by Hinckley's lawyer. Vice President George Bush is in Japan today, and there's a hint he may go to China before winding up his Asian trip. Gordon Joseloff has more from Tokyo.
The Vice President's one full day in Japan was heavy on ceremony. A state welcome, luncheon with the Emperor, a tree planting, and dinner with the Prime Minister. But there was time for talks with Prime Minister Zenko Suzuki and other ministers that focused on Japanese-American trade friction. Speaking to a press group late in the day, Bush sounded optimistic about the trade issue.
Some newspapers have drawn the conclusion that our two countries are moving towards a head-on collision on trade. I disagree with that, particularly after my talks. I think happily that we're moving toward head-on decisions on trade.
Asked whether he intends to add a stop in China to his two-week Asia and Pacific tour, Bush sidestepped a direct answer, saying he can't confirm such a trip, but made it clear he's ready to go.
If a visit by the Vice President of the United States would be productive and useful, we'd change plans, go the extra mile.
The Vice President leaves tomorrow for South Korea. Gordon Joseloff, CBS News, Tokyo.
It's that time again to worry about the time and that lost hour of sleep. Except for Arizona, Hawaii, and the eastern time areas of Indiana, clocks go ahead 1 hour tonight as most of the nation shifts over to daylight savings time. We get the hour of sleep back next October when standard time returns.